Welcome to the Rehab Lab. I'm your host, Joe Lemon, and today's special guest is Dr. Alana Struble. Now, I've had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Alana for at least a good, 4 to 5 years. And ever since I first met her at her original garage gym setup, I've always been impressed by her style, how she spends so much time being attentive to the actual patients and the humans. I mean, it's one of those places where you can just feel the love, really. And they do everything in there. They have everything from a full-on gym. They have pup Pilates. They have an underwater treadmill, laser therapy, acupuncture, full-on pool as well, just for exercises. And, you know, of course, they do shockwave therapy. And since I've last been out there, they have doubled the size of their facility. So there's 2 underwater treadmills. They have 2 shockwaves since I've been there, laser therapy, and the list goes on. And one of the reasons why I'm excited to bring this conversation to you today is there's a way in the recipe how she mixes everything together that is seamless, right? And it's based off of educating the actual patient so they understand what the care looks like at home, but also buy into the process while they're at the facility. And of course, during the past 18 months or so, it's been difficult to have the face-to-face with the actual dog owners or their cat owners, but you know, finding out how you can be creative with that process and still keep that relationship tight and strong is, I think, is one of the real arts of healthcare that I think that she does phenomenal. So with that being said, I know you guys are gonna love this episode. So sit back and enjoy this conversation with Dr. Alana Struble. So I'm really excited to have a good friend here, Dr. Alana Struble. You know, welcome back to the podcast. We did this many, many moons ago, and we were just kind of laughing because we were talking about some of the teams that actually have the unit, and we're still working on those giants out there in like San Francisco. But with that being said, one, big congratulations to the brand new clinic and your whole expansion. I think it's awesome. I remember coming out to the Bay Area and seeing you operate, and you had a great setup right there on the coast. And I was out of a very small facility, but it was awesome, boutique style. And so I'm excited to see what you do with this brand new place. Welcome on to the podcast.
Yep, thank you. Yep. We've been working through the pandemic using the garage and the driveway as our outdoor exam room. So we've been wheeling our shockwave unit with extension cords outside and working outside and inside and using whatever space we have.
Let's kind of start right there because, you know, it really has been a crazy 18 months for a lot of people. How have you guys weathered this whole 2020 to 2022 experience? How's everything been so far?
Well, that being said, I am moving to a different room. There's a lot of excitement going on in the house. We have some family members here on spring break, and it's exciting because people haven't been able to travel. And so we have nieces and nephews and everyone here visiting, getting ready to go down to Monterey. But yeah, the pandemic, how have we been doing during the pandemic?
Yeah,
we've been busy in a nutshell. We've been really, really busy. And it's been hard to fit everybody in and see all the clients and patients that need to be seen. So that's partly why we're expanding. We just decided that, you know, we needed to have more exam room space than a parking lot and the driveway for a backup exam room space. So yeah, we're excited to have, we'll have 3 full exam rooms and a big gym, and we'll be able to accommodate people.
Love that. Last time I was there, you had like underwater treadmill as well, laser therapy. Are those still going to be the same, very same services? And you had 2 units?
Yep. We're getting 2 additional treadmills. So we'll have a total of 3 underwater treadmills and a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. That's been the limiting factor is number of appointment spots that we have for hydrotherapy. But we do so many other treatments besides the hydrotherapy. We really use all of the different modalities in rehab, electrical stim, laser, but we really use a lot of shockwave, And I find that sometimes some of the veterinarians, the referring veterinarians, when they hear the word shockwave, they think that it's a really intense treatment to be using, and they don't really know that it can be used for myofascial pain in the way that we use it. They think of it only as breaking up calcification, tendon, ligament, or stimulating bone growth for non-union fractures. and or using it for like biceps tendonitis or it's real specific situations, but we use it for pretty much all of our patients that have myofascial pain. And so any condition, any orthopedic or neurologic condition leads to overcompensation in the opposite limbs and in the spine, and there's always myofascial pain. So we find that manual therapy is very helpful, but we get more out of our manual therapy after we've done shockwave, where we can relieve some of that pain, and then the animals really relax and then allow us to do more with our hands than we'd be able to do. Get some flexibility back and elasticity in the muscles. So
I love that. No, you know what? All right. So you dove right into it. I can't resist. I got to peel back the onion a little bit here on your process, because, you know, when I was coming out to visit in the Bay Area, and I haven't been out to the Bay Area in, it's been forever, it feels like, you used it a lot different as far as the actual focus shockwave than a lot of other people. From what I remember, you would do at a much lower energy output, and you would do more pulses. Could you maybe explain some of your thought process of kind of how you like to apply shockwave?
Exactly. Yes. We, especially with new patients that have a lot of pain, we like to start at a very low intensity because they tolerate it. They get used to the sensation. I know when I've applied it to myself and you hit a sore spot at a higher intensity, it feels kind of intense. And then the animals can become nervous and not very trusting. And I like to see them relax. I like to watch them soften their face. Their eyes get kind of droopy. A lot of times they'll stop panting and lie down. I'll hear clients say, wow, they've never done that before at a vet, you know. So we start somewhere between 0.3 to 0.5 on the intensity at the lowest settings and work our way up over time to an average of around 6 to 8 on the intensity, not necessarily in the first session. And then there are times when, let's say, for example, I have a patient that has severe elbow osteoarthritis, an older Labrador, and her muscles are always rock hard on her neck and her shoulders and her pecs. But she loves shockwave at low intensity over those muscles. They soften, they relax. But if I get too close to the elbow where she has the most inflammation, I have to lower it even further because she'll hop up. She'll be lying there relaxed, and all of a sudden she'll pop right up and be like, look at me, like, okay, I felt that more intensely, stop. And so I'll turn it back down, and then she'll relax a little. And then if you do treat over an area that's very sore with a lower intensity, I think you block some of the superficial pain receptors and the fascia, and then you can get a little deeper to treat your joint contracture and your joint fluid when they're more comfortable, so you can slowly turn it up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so whenever you say, what you mean that you can work deeper, you mean like manually with your hands, kind of get in there and massage those areas better after you do it, after you have that first session, or you mean turning up the actual energy?
Both, and even changing the standoff pad and going maybe, you know, from more superficial, like 5 millimeters deep, down to 10, so we can get into the joint capsule area itself. So I'm trying to relax all of the pain fibers and from the origin and insertion of the muscles that attach to that joint. And I particularly like that for hip dysplasia patients too. I find that if we go straight for the joint capsule, they're a little more sore. I get feedback from the clients that they seem more sore and more lame after if you go straight for the joint capsule at too high of an intensity. So I focus on all of the muscles that attach to the hip joint and work on relaxing those muscles. And then they get a lot more range of motion. They can extend the hips, they can abduct the hips a little bit more. And so, you know, treating the perimeter of the painful joint and then coming in and maybe doing a little bit of work over the joint at a low intensity seems to be the key to success for comfort.
Well, you know what, this is an ongoing conversation on the whole human side, right? And because how we operate and how we're instructed to operate out of Germany, a lot of time, you know, you can use ultrasound imaging, find the right depth, find those lesions, target that lesion, right? And it's a very static approach. Now we're getting more into doing more dynamic treatments where you're moving over the tissue super slow. I think that's more your style, kind of how you've been operating based off my memory
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I found that, you know, I was instructed originally to do the find the lesion and flare it until you saw muscle fasciculation, and then you knew you were in the right spot. But I found that it created more inflammation and tissue trauma than was necessary. And one of the things that I took away from that initial treatment training from you, Joe, was it doesn't have to be that kind of a session. When you were treating, you know, practicing, showing me how it feels, treating my own muscle pain, and I was trying to stop, you know, tough it out and tolerate the discomfort. And you're like, I can turn it down. It doesn't have to be that kind of session. And so you would turn it down a notch, and I'm like, okay, I can still feel it and I can tolerate this. So let's treat for a couple, you know, maybe 1500 pulses at this intensity rather at the more painful intensity. And that's how I approach it with the animals. They can't really tell me, hey, could you turn that down? Or you're in the right spot. I just have to read their body language. So
I love that. I mean, because honestly, on the human side too, people, this is still so new to people. People are still learning about shockwave. I mean, even, you know, lots of healthcare providers are still figuring out how to, you know, actually implement it. And then the art form of it, right? You know, because we have the science behind what's happening, but then the art of how do you apply it? How do you find the right depth? Where do you start? I think those are something that we're just beginning to kind of understand. And you know, at least from how my first thought about it was, if I come in here and just blow you away based off the protocols I saw like on the paper, which are normally really high, right? You know, you're like, okay, you want me to start at, you know, almost the max level on someone who's never experienced before? They're never coming back for session 4, 5, and 6, which is really what they need, right? And so your patients don't talk, but they also don't lie, right? You know?
If they're popping up and looking at me, I know that they're feeling it. And if they're not looking at me, but their eyes are getting soft and their bodies relax, and I also know they're feeling it. So I definitely do fan through the tissue because it's hard. They can't say, okay, perfect, right there, hold it right there. But if I go slowly through the tissue and come back, I know I'm getting, you know, the trigger point. And also, myofascial trigger points are not discrete nodes. They have bands of taut tissue that go throughout the whole muscle belly. So I like to scan through the tissue. If I can feel a trigger point, palpate it, I'll try to target it and aim it for it and come back to it, especially in, let's say, a lot of cruciate or chronic knee pain or patella dogs, patella luxation, they'll almost always have a myofascial trigger point about the size of an almond in their proximal rectus femoris. And so I'll target that proximal quad sartorius and see if I can palpate it. I'll try to stabilize it with my fingers beneath it and the probe over it and try to aim for that tissue. And if they're really uncomfortable, I'll just fan through it and come back and fan through it and come back. And you can feel the tissue soften. And then also you can feel it release. You can feel that myofascial release where I might have it on gentle stretch. And while I'm treating it, I can feel it relax and I can go a lot deeper all of a sudden. It's with the pectorals, with the psoas, and with the proximal quads. When you feel the muscle relax, then you can get like sometimes another 10 degrees of range of motion out of that muscle stretching the joint. I mean, range of motion from the joint because the muscles have relaxed.
So. All right. So this is fun here because, you know, we've been trying to figure out the best joint positioning when doing different shock waves, and it's funny because obviously overseas they've been doing a lot longer than us. This is more of a staple when you look at what's happening over in Germany and something that's trying to catch on here. But when you think about our dynamic approach, at least lots of my clients, that they kind of follow your actual thought process of, you know, we should work it dynamically and work in fascial planes and most to just find the spot and treat the spots, you know. So whenever you put muscles on stretch, have you done any imaging at all so you can kind of see what's happening there underneath the actual?
I have an ultrasound probe. Mm-hmm. I had signed up before the pandemic for a musculoskeletal ultrasound course, and it got canceled. And then it got canceled again. And then it got rescheduled for the 1 week that I had planned to travel to visit my mother for the first time in 2 years. So I didn't go. So I have to take this course because I would like to be able to do the imaging and be able to interpret, you know, what I'm seeing more accurately. But no, I'm relying on my hands. I'm relying on what I feel. And I'm relying on the body of the patient to tell me, have I achieved enough treatment? So I'll go back over a tissue after I've treated it and palpate for the local twitch response for trigger point pain. And if they still have a local twitch response, I'll go back over that tissue either with a different standoff pad to go a little deeper, or I'll change the angle of the probe a little bit. And then I like to work the tissues while I'm, especially with lats and traps, I like to work it while I'm working on with the shockwave so I can see, okay, I'm no longer getting that twitch response. I have succeeded here. I can move on.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, I think it's great whenever we have that, you know, objective data through imaging to kind of say exactly what's happening. But, you know, and someone that has experienced touch, right? I mean, you can tell whenever tissue starting to really soften and become more pliable and it's not as dense, right? I mean, so, you know, talk about changing your depths of penetration. And one, honestly, I'm being 100% selfish about all these questions because I get them all the time. You know, so I'm really curious, like, are you changing them in the middle of the of sessions? Are these happening over?
No, sometimes I'm changing them in the middle of the session. I'll say, okay, I want to treat this shoulder. I want to get my biceps and supraspinatus tendons. But then I also want to get into the pecs or into the triceps because those muscles are tight because they're trying to hold that shoulder together because it's unstable. So I'll use a 5mm standoff pad to start to treat over the tendon and the joint capsule and the joint itself. If I think this secondary, well, there almost always is secondary osteoarthritis in an unstable joint. So I'll treat with the 5 and then I'll go up to maybe a 10 or 15, depending on the size of the dog, to get the surrounding soft tissues so that then I can stretch and get a little range of motion. Same thing with the stifle. You know, I'll use a 5 to get in if I'm trying to visualize that I'm targeting the cranial cruciate inside the knee joint or the patella tendon if they have patella tendonitis, or if there's a fusion in the joint, I'll use a 5. And then I'll switch to the 10 to go up the quads because I want to get a little deeper into the belly of the muscle. Again, it's dog size dependent. I might go up to a 15. Rarely do I use a 20 on a peripheral limb. I'll use maybe 20, 25 along psoas, paraspinals, or if it's a really, really big dog, maybe to get to the joint, I might have to use a deeper, you know, a standoff pad.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. Okay. All right. You know, let me get back to helping out the audience because 100% that was more so for me than it was for anybody else. Hopefully they got some benefit from it too. But you know, when I think about shockwave and how it fits into other practices, how are you applying laser and maybe some other type of tools into the actual treatment process? Or is it a shockwave day? Is it a manual therapy day? Or is it, you know, all different type of tools in like one session? I'm curious how
We tend to schedule by type of modality so that we can reserve the equipment so that we're not all fighting for the same 2 shockwave units. I don't think we can get a third one yet, but at some point that might be in the cards. I don't know. Yeah. But what we'll do is, first of all, you can't laser over gel or a wet dog, and you can't do electrical stim after you've covered the dog in gel. And as you know, I use a lot of gel in my practice. Because if you don't get through the animal's fur to make contact with the skin, you're not treating the muscle, you're treating air, you're treating the fur. And so, so we use a lot of gel. So a lot of times what we might do is divide a session where if they have hind end weakness, we might put the electrical stim on their hams and their quads and then start doing shockwave up on their neck and shoulders because they're tight from overcompensating, which is the case for all of the neurologic patients and especially DM dogs, you know. And laser is fantastic for DM, for degenerative myelopathy, for nerve neuropathies. So we might laser over the weak, you know, the muscles of the spine to target the spinal nerves coming out, but then shockwave over it afterwards to try to help with the muscle pain. I think it's a little more effective than the laser for myofascial pain in my hands. So yeah, we'll combine modalities, but we have to do them in the right order. And I always like to prepare the tissue for function before we ask them to do Therex or underwater treadmill. I like them to have range of motion. I like them to be more comfortable. So we'll treat, I like them to have electrical stim to activate the muscles so they participate more and we can facilitate them to use all of their muscles instead of compensating. especially with the old dogs with hip dysplasia, they have no butt. So we have to turn on their glutes and we have to turn on their hamstrings, semitendinosus, biceps femoris with electrical stim. But then we might do shockwave over their paraspinals, you know, the lumbar spine. The shoulders are always sore, upper shoulders, thoracic.
Front shoulders. It makes sense.
Yeah, from compensation. And so, you know, I will combine it, but we have some patients, clients will sign them up for different modalities on different days, and we get a lot of feedback. Can I convert the rest of my laser package to shockwave? You know?
Oh, really? So, that happens a lot too, huh? Okay.
Yeah, he seems to feel better on days when he gets the shockwave. Or, you know, can we do this twice a week instead of doing this one time and that the other time? You know, and so we do respect our clients' observations, because it's also no placebo effect there. They don't know that shockwave, that I find it to be better with myofascial pain than laser. They have no expectation. So they come home and they see, wow, he's running around like a puppy. He's jumping up on the counter and pulling food off the counter. He hasn't done that in 10 years, you know, and on days when he has laser, they don't get that same puppy energy again. So I think they kind of, when they're picking and choosing how they want to spend money on treatment packages, they'll often ask for the shockwave. So
no, that, you know, I think that's great. I mean, and all right, some business building questions for private practice owners, because, you know, a lot of people are like trying to consider what's the best fit for their practice, you know, and there's a lot of different tools out there. And again, I was just telling you about how I was at the whole VMX, and I don't know how many vendors there were, you know, 500 plus vendors. Like, as a private practice owner, like what do you think about where to start adding the right tools to the right practice? I mean, obviously there's a lot of different directions to kind of go there, but if we keep it with different rehab tools, obviously, you know, any thoughts about that might help out other docs about trying to consider what's going to be a best fit for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that when people think of rehab, most general practice vets and perhaps most new grads from Canine Rehab Institute or Tennessee's program, perhaps they might think treadmill and laser are the two modalities that they have to start with because that's most familiar. A lot of vets will refer people for specific modalities without allowing me to do my evaluation. And so clients will come in and say, I really want to get laser treatment. I heard laser is really great. And it is great. And I'll say, yeah, it is great, but I think we also need to apply this modality and try it. And so, and then they can see, you know, the improvement in their animal. So I know that it's important to have, you know, the standard treatments available. So getting laser and water therapy is very important. But if you can budget for the shockwave, or if you can do a payment plan that you can, you know, your practice can afford, the shockwave unit more than paid for itself. It probably paid for the treadmill, and it's paid for my new building that I'm moving into. Because, you know, when we calculated how many treatments we do per year and the income it's generated, you know, it more than paid for itself in 1 year and allowed us to get a second unit right away, because we had a waiting list for that modality. Wow. Clients requesting it, and the two of us, Dr. Perlstein, who works with me, we would be fighting over it if we were working on the same day. It was like the hot potato. Are you almost done with the shockwave? I've got a new patient here. I want to try treatment. So,
I love hearing that. And, you know, there is that, you know, almost like, you know, like instant type of feedback that you get from the whole shockwave therapy that I think that you don't catch from a lot of other tools that are out there. But What's your thoughts on the theory why that is? Is it more of a gate theory where you're turning off those pain receptors? I mean, obviously we know that we are changing the actual quality of that tissue. You can see that on the whole ultrasound imaging, but, you know, do you think that it is also the fact that we're turning off some of those, just like the fact that they're going to have to feel that, you know, pain going through that range of motion again, so they seem more active as well. Do you have any thoughts around why that is?
I mean, I do think that it does gate the pain, definitely. Mm-hmm. And it does, there's so many ways, so many biological effects of radial shockwave and focused shockwave that have been studied. And what makes the most sense to me on how it's so fast is that I understand it, that the actual pulses can interfere with depolarization and repolarization of some of those superficial pain fibers so that they can't actually signal, like interferes with their signaling. And when I first read that, I thought, oh my God, what if I do that to the femoral nerve and then they can't stand, you know, they can't use their leg. But apparently those are thicker, more myelinated, bigger nerves, and you cannot affect them in the same way. But with the superficial, you know, pain nociceptors and the A delta and C fibers, you know, the different pain receptors, and small nerve endings that are out there in the fascia, I think we are probably turning them off acutely, literally. That's how I explain it to my clients. And you can see it in the response of the animal, for sure.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, at first, once I first heard that, I was thinking like, man, that's probably not a good thing because we're not doing the quality work that you would think that it was is needed, right? For just turning off those pain receptors. But if you're in pain, that's probably what you want.
It interrupts the chronic pain pathway process. You know, it's a pain holiday and it lasts for 24 to 48 hours in some of these patients before they start to have more pain again. People will describe that to me. And then they can say, well, towards the end of this week, he started limping more again, or I could see that he was more sore because they're using their body and continuing to have abnormal movement or unstable joint and more pain in those joint receptors. So,
yeah, no, you know, that's really good input too, because it just speaks to the fact that it's a piece of the puzzle that could help a lot of patients, but it's not the total picture, right? It's something that where you still need to do the other work through corrective exercise and other tools that might help, you know, bring the whole pet back to health. So no, I think that's great that you brought that up.
And treating for pain is the first step in rehab. If you have pain, pain inhibits your muscles. So you can't build muscle if you have pain. And I don't know where the no pain, no gain came from, because it's not true. If you have pain, you're not going to have gain. You know, it's a fact that, you know, the quads are inhibited when you rupture your cruciate ligament, in part because the cruciate ligament's no longer able to signal, stretch receptors aren't firing, and the quads get, you know, they're message scrambled and they just turn off. But pain will also inhibit those muscles and chronic pain. So just blocking that, then it does allow you to then do therapeutic exercise and actually achieve progress and build muscle.
Yeah, I think it's time that we get rid of that whole saying. You know, it's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's outdated.
Yeah, it's definitely dated. It's not wearing the whole like test of time that well.
Exactly.
Well, you know what, as we get ready just to kind of wrap up here, a couple of thoughts about over the past 18 months, maybe any of the biggest lessons that you learned along the way over the past pandemic timeframe, because we haven't spoken in a while, and just kind of curious, and any takeaways for the audience that maybe that might help out their whole practices?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I'll say in my experience in general has been that when a client can see the animal have the treatment and see their biological response, like I show people, look how twitchy he is now. I'm palpating. Okay, now let's treat. Now look at that, the twitching is gone. And they can see that the dog that came in kyphotic is now flatter. They can see that he's walking more, you know, that his legs aren't crisscrossing because we've treated his adductors and they're no longer tight and legs aren't tethered together. He can actually walk with his feet squarely under the hips. So they can see the progress during treatment, and they can also participate because they can see how I'm stretching, and I can say, this is how you want to do it. This is how you want to hold the stretch. Now you go home now that he's relaxed and he's comfortable and practice this. I can give them pictures and videos and handouts. I give them all of that. But when they get home, they don't know where to put their hands and they get confused. And so I'll sometimes do one side and I'll stretch and then I'll say, okay, now you practice on the other side, and we'll get the dog to lay down on the opposite side and I'll treat, and then I'll have them do the stretch so they can know where to sit, where to put their hands. Just the hands-on training is so important. And it's been really hard during the pandemic for a lot of clinics to bring animals indoors. But wearing the N95 masks, making sure everybody's being smart, getting vaccinated. And for us, we're lucky because we've been in an open air gym, but a garage that we converted into a gym. But you can get those HEPA filters that are for 500 square feet and put it in an exam room, and you've got blue air. You can test it with their little monitor. It turns blue within a minute and it's filtering all those particles. So if it gives you and your staff more comfort and confidence and safety, then I think it's worth worth it to bring the clients in. I know a lot of vets have been really actually getting more work done with not having the clients there. But I think it really helps to have the client, because then they also see how much work you're doing on their animal, and they're more inclined to pay for another package too. But also they really, really appreciate watching their animals relax. They love seeing them lie down, stretch out, fall asleep, especially for nervous dogs. Pictures and videos aren't the same as being there live and in person. So
I love that feedback, because as we wrap up, one of the times I remember, there was a cat that came in, and I was like, oh man, you know, there's no way this cat's gonna let us do Shockwave. You know, like, I'm not sure if you recall this.
I mean, good that you brought up the cats. I have a number of cat patients that I've been seeing lately. And I do, for cats, I almost always do a combination of acupuncture and laser. But then I've added Shockwave for the cats that have severe myofascial pain. And hands down, it makes the biggest difference. And the cats do tolerate it. And we, especially if you turn down your intensity and you use as little gel as you need to just get through that fur. But then what I do, I showed Cindy this, she came and filmed a cat patient of mine. I use what I call the hot towel wrap afterwards, because I do use a shower to rinse off these dog patients that have so much gel on them before they go in the treadmill or in the pool. And you can't shower off a cat, obviously. So I get these hot towels soaked in hot, you know, water from our shower, wrap the cat in it, and then I can comb through the hair with like a flea comb or another fine tooth comb, and it brings out the gel from the fur, but it's also a fascia treatment. The wow. Cats, they bliss out and they love it. The heat is treatment, and then the combing is treatment. So it's kind of a package deal, Shockwave, hot towel wrap, and a comb massage.
I mean, but you know what though? So what's so interesting about all this to me is that like you're so like hands-on with all your patients, at least from my little bit of time together. I'm not there every day, obviously, so I don't know what's going on. But I mean, the 3-4 times that we had, you know, what's the name of that one restaurant down the street?
The Peruvian place.
That's right. Hopefully it's still close, because once I'm back, we have to do something there. But
maybe. Oh yeah. They have outdoor dining too. It's great.
Beautiful. I mean, and like you were there hands-on with the families that were coming in, you sat them on the floor, you explained what was going on, you put them, you had them hold them, you had to go through the stretches with you. I remember those things, like, man, you don't see that a lot. And I think that from a value add, as a person that has, like, you know, I have a little Boston Terrier that's like sleep over here next to me. And when you bring your animals to any rehab facility, you're there because you're concerned, right? You're there because you're like concerned about somebody that's in your family. And so you come with anxiety and a little bit of stress of what's going to happen and what's the whole next step here. And whenever someone gets you involved, and it kind of brings everyone down, obviously the actual pets kind of relax, and then you as the owner also say, all right, we're in good hands here. you know.
And it's not been that experience throughout the pandemic. Most of the animals are getting dropped off at the curb, and a lot of people tell me they haven't even met the vet that's been treating their animals because they've only talked to them on the phone. And I would be nervous. I wouldn't want to, you know, have my hands, my animal in an appointment where I've never met the vet. And even if I could just meet them on Zoom, I think it's really helpful. If you're doing a drop off at the curb, do a Zoom call with them rather than a phone call. I think people like to meet you face to face. And I find it easier to hear people also when we're not wearing masks, there's not barking dogs in the background. So I'll do a lot of Zoom appointments before. And you know, I spend a half hour, but I charge for that time. And so it does make it harder to get as many appointments in as you can, but I definitely train my staff, and I have really well-trained staff, and that's why we're expanding. I'm hiring more staff, training them on how to do the Shockwave. And I have a handful of staff who are trained in manual therapy, and we really work on those animals. So we spend the time, the clients are happy, they pay for it, and the practice is growing. So
no, yeah. Well, look, honestly, I'm not surprised. It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, that fact that you guys are booming during this time frame, and especially if you found a creative way to keep people engaged, because that's been a struggle I've heard of as well. A lot of clinics are busy, but the, you know, when you start thinking about our retention rates and lifetime values of your actual, you know, customers and your patients, you know, that extra step, it matters, you know, because like I had an experience where I run Jasper in my little Boston down the street, and they called me and I had to stay outside from the parking lot, and, you know, they helped out. So I am grateful. With that being said, am I excited to go back and not know who's going to handle them if something else goes on? I can't say I am, you know, and I think all those things add up to building out a great practice. So, with that said, please tell everybody how to find you, in case they have some more, in case they have any questions for you about Shockwave, or they want to come by and see the brand new facility. Do you mind kind of plugging away? Your brand new.
Yeah. I mean, I host interns for, you know, vet school and Canine Rehab Institute. So if you're a vet and you're getting your training and you want to come out and spend some time learning Shockwave with me, you can. And you can contact us through our website, A Well-Adjusted Pet. I think Joe will post that information as part of the podcast. We're currently in Pacifica, California, which is just 10 minutes outside of San Francisco. We're moving to San Bruno, which is I'm literally going to be across the street from the airport, across Highway 101 from the airport. So we won't be right on the ocean, but we'll be really convenient for people visiting from out of town. And so we'll be in San Bruno, and we'll probably be moving in about 6 months. So stay tuned. And if you want to follow what we're doing on with Shockwave and with our treatments, we're on Facebook and Instagram at A Well-Adjusted Pet. And feel free to email me with any questions. I love talking about Shockwave. Joe knows that. And yeah, if you're in the Bay Area and you want to stop by and say hi, just, you know, shoot me an email. I'm happy to host you for an afternoon.
Wow. Well, you know what? That's super generous of you. And I mean, now that you're right next to the airport, that makes it super easy. I mean, you were pretty close before, but next month, I'm definitely dropping by. So thank you so much for taking a moment just to kind of break away. I know you're super busy. So thanks for coming on to the podcast, Doc. We appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to talk with you always, Joe.
Likewise.